calling 911 when in an accident may just not be enough. Car accident, remember. After 911, call 411. 1-800-411-PAIN. 1-800-411-PAIN is a legal and medical referral service. Non-employee spokesperson.
Ticket on Facebook. Like us on 790 The Ticket. We've got breaking news, behind-the-scenes videos, pictures, articles, and sometimes our thoughts on things. Like us, 790 The Ticket on Facebook. Breaking news here. And Barry, I'll let you say what it is.
Yes, Wayne Ellington, as expected, back with the Miami Heat. The cap was not an obstacle. The Heat did salary cap gymnastics, which they are so proficient at, led by GM Andy Ellisberg, so they've been able to fit in Wayne Ellington, $6.3 million contract. I was told earlier today, 99.9% chance, now a 100% chance. Wayne Ellington back in the Miami Heat. And in the last 2 minutes, Miami has announced the re-signing of James Johnson. We know the terms, 4 years, $60 million. Pat Riley says James Johnson epitomizes everything that the Miami Heat is about. He came in, made a promise to us, and then fulfilled that promise by becoming a world-class athlete, thus leading to the best season he has had in the NBA. Today, he is being rewarded for the fulfillment of that promise. We will continue to push him to get him to an even higher level. His signing today, for me personally and the coaching staff, is one of our happiest signings. So a very nice statement from Pat Riley about James Johnson coming back. So your updated, I wish we had the Family Feud music here, the board says. The updated count of Heat players signed is now 13. Udonis Haslam will be the 14th at some point, in all likelihood, over the next couple of weeks. That leaves you three open roster spots. People might say, why three? Don't you have one? Well, the NBA this year allowing two players to be signed to two-way contracts. They're required to spend most of the season in the minors. They can spend no more than 45 days with the big team. So, frankly, you have the ability to add one more piece. Could be Luke Babbitt. I know Babbitt has been told the Heat wants him back, but he also has other inquiries. So, not clear yet whether Luke Babbitt will want to go to a place where maybe he could play more. And then A.J. Hammonds, a center that they got from Dallas in the deal that allowed them to dump Josh McRoberts. He's one of the 13 players on the roster now. He's not a cinch to make the roster. He's going to play for the Heat Summer League team in Las Vegas. So that would be the one player who's on a contract whose status would be somewhat in doubt at this point. But we pretty much know your Miami Heat team. It's Hassan, Kelly Olynyk, Bam Adebayo, Akaro White, James Johnson at your power rotation spots, your small forwards, Justice Winslow, and Rodney Magruder, and your guards. Five quality NBA guards, Josh. Deion Waiters, Goran Dragic, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, and now Wayne Ellington. You like the team?
I do like the team. I think there's a lot of front court depth there. I think if they can remain healthy. I mean, you think about it, one of the additions you have to factor in to the team is Justice Winslow, who did nothing last year. You know, you're bringing him back. It's essentially a first-rounder from 2 years ago that you're bringing back. You've got him. You've got Olynyk. You know, you've got some good front court depth there. You've got hopefully a healthy Deion Waiters for the entire year. You've got James Johnson and realizing what he brings for an entire year. You've got guys now, you know, some of them were the newcomers last year were in the system. Maybe now the second year in the system should bring them, you know, a lot more familiarity. I do like the team. I like it a lot.
What's the thing, if there was one thing that you're most curious about, to me, it's one of these two things. Is Justice Winslow going to be an effective NBA player offensively? The other thing I'm most curious about is, was the short burst of greatness from Deion Waiters a harbinger? Is this the new Deion Waiters, or was it a flash in the pan, and will he revert to being, you know, basically a marginal NBA starter?
No, I'm going to be the glasses half full on this one. I think, you know, I think he changed his attitude. I think, you know, he became a team player. I think that he gelled incredibly well with Goran Dragic, as far as Deion did. And I'm really glasses half full on this. I think he'll now feel, I mean, some players in sports, when they get that fat contract, you know, they regress a little bit. I don't get that impression with him and particularly not with James Johnson. I think it was going to work harder than he ever has.
Right. I agree with that because I think Deion is driven by ego, and that's not a bad thing. Deion wants to be considered an all-star type NBA guard, and I don't think he's going to rest until he's reached that level. I mean, you see how he soaked up all the adulation, not only from how he played in February, March, but that Players Tribune story he wrote saying, instead of being in the playoffs, I'm writing these damn articles. It was a very funny essay he wrote that he has retweeted around 831 times.
I'm also curious, who's going to start at the four? Will it be James Johnson? Will it be Kelly Olynyk, who typically has played more five? If it's Johnson, I mean, he was so good. I know you're paying the guy $15 million a year. And, you know, the axiom is it doesn't matter who starts it, who finishes. You know, guys that come off the bench can still play starters minutes. He and Tyler Johnson were so good at coming off the bench. Do you want to break that up? These are really good decisions that Eric Spoelstra has to make.
Unquestionably. And I wrote a story earlier today in which I asked a couple of NBA scouts, who would you start at power forward? And they gave me two completely different answers. One of them said James Johnson because he's a better defender. That scout said you can play faster with James Johnson. The other one said, I'd rather start Olynyk because he can stretch the floor a little bit more than James Johnson, even though Johnson did shoot 34% on threes last year compared to 37% for Olynyk. The other point he made is that even though Olynyk is not as good a defensive player as James Johnson, Whiteside can cover some of those mistakes defensively. If a guy beats Olynyk off the dribble, at least Hassan will be there to try to alter the shot.
One guy writes in, will the Heat use the mid-level exception or save it in case of a late-season buyout catches their eye? If I'm the Heat right now, I mean, I don't know who's out there right now that would really matter. I might wait.
I would too. There's nobody on this list that you need. The best players still remaining are C.J. Miles, who's a decent swingman, who's had some success for Indiana. To me, not a player you need. Ersan Ilyasova, good NBA player. You don't need him. I wait because you don't know who's going to be bought out in February, and the Heat would be in a position where they could dangle $4.3 million prorated instead of the minimum, which is what other teams could dangle. So say you have a couple of injuries at shooting guard and say the Bulls buy out Dwayne Wade and you're sitting there with a chance to offer him the $4.3 million. I think you keep it. Haslam, you're going to be able to re-sign, I presume, at the veterans minimum, which, by the way, has increased in this new labor deal. So the minimum for Haslam, a player of his experience, is now $2.1 million. Babbitt's would be close to $2 million as well. So he could re-sign and still make a couple of million dollars, even with a minimum deal. And remember, you can go over the cap to sign players at the minimum. The Heat is now capped out. You can sign players to the minimum over the cap, and you can still obviously exceed the cap to use that $4.3 million.
And Jamal Crawford just got released, right?
Jamal Crawford got released. And guess who's pursuing him? The Cleveland Cavaliers, incidentally today signed Jeff Green, the veteran small forward who had some success with OKC earlier in his career. So the Cavs offseason, how do you like what the Cavs have done, Josh? Jeff Green re-signing Kyle Korver at $7 million a year, and Jose Calderon, who's seen better days.
It's okay. It's nothing. I think, honestly, Boston's closed the gap on them a little bit. And the thing about interesting to me about Cleveland's offseason is, at least as far as we know, LeBron didn't do any campaigning, any recruiting at all to bring players to Cleveland.
Right. Now, there was one report tonight that you didn't see yet, and I just saw in the last 1 minute that said that LeBron did call Jeff Green. Okay. But you're absolutely right. Before that, we heard nothing to suggest that LeBron was helping out.
All right. I want to talk about UD, but also I want to answer that question about Riley's successor. We'll talk about that next. But first, for a final time, let's go to headlines.
Here's what's trending now in Miami on The Ticket. WAXYAM South Miami and FM 104.3 HD2 Miramar.
The radio home of the Miami Heat.
Marlins open up their final three-game series before the All-Star break. It's a late-nighter. They take on the Giants in San Francisco. First pitch is a little over an hour away. Marlins starter Dan Straley has never lost to the Giants. He'll be opposed by Matt Moore. Ichiro Suzuki keeps moving up the all-time hit list. He's now 23rd with 3,054. Now, last night, his two hits vaulted him past Hall of Famer Rod Carew, and he now finds himself one behind another Hall of Famer, Ricky Henderson. And Cleveland Indians manager Terry Francona will not be available to manage the American League squad in next Tuesday's All-Star game here in Miami. He had a heart procedure today to correct an irregular heartbeat. He's in the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland. He'll be discharged in a couple of days and expected to make a full recovery. In his place will be his bench coach, Brad Mills, and he'll also be assisted. Mills will be assisted by the Indian staff and Tampa Bay Rays manager, Kevin Cash. And as we said earlier, just in a story that has me shaking my head. Now, we all know At least as of right now, Mike Francesa of WFAN in New York is going to retire. He announces retirement, which will take place at the end of the year. And New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is filling in for him next Monday and Tuesday. And the station is calling that an audition to replace Mike Francesa. We still are looking for that perfect nickname, as many people have. Not everybody, as many people have in sports radio. They have a nickname. Mine is Frito. Trust me, it's better than a lot of other ones I've heard in the past. What would be Chris Christie's nickname if he got a full-time job in sports radio?
I'd go with Blowhard. And that's no reflection of my views of him politically. Frankly, I think he's going to be decent at this. I don't know if he's going to be great, but he's opinionated. He knows sports. He's polarizing. I think he's going to make people listen at least to the audition. The question is, does he bring those people back to listen to him? And the thing we have been talking about, you're of the belief that you don't need to be likable to be a successful sports
talk host. I just think you have to be enticing. People want to know what you will say next.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Now, I've done solo shows. I don't know if these will be paired with anybody. Solo shows are not easy, okay? And when I do them occasionally now, and I used to do them for years, I want to engage. I don't want to do a monologue for 4 hours, or 3 hours, I should say. I don't want to do that. So I try to engage in callers. You know, and I want to get a dialogue and not just deliver a monologue, which are not easy to do. Chris Christie, though, as a matter of fact, he's historically unpopular. Quinnipiac polls have said he's got the lowest approval rating of any governor in I don't know how long. Maybe
right,
decades.
14%, just unspeakably
right.
Low.
So would he dare to take phone calls when those phone calls could just turn against him in the blink of an eye? I don't know about that.
That's a great question, because he's going to get ripped for what happened with closing the bridge.
Everything.
Even though he was never found legally to be directly responsible for a park closing in New Jersey over July 4th
the
weekend.
Beach.
The beach,
right.
Exactly. When he went to the beach with his family, but others weren't allowed. How do the producers at FAN deal with that?
I don't know. That's a question that I've wondered since I read this story. Will Christie, look, as well as he or other politicians can talk, he's not going to be able to talk for 4 hours. He just won't be able to deliver, especially if you've never done it before.
Right.
And
right.
So it's not easy. I just think, boy, if he takes calls, that's a risk.
Yes. And that dump button's going to get a workout.
Oh, my God.
Right.
All right. So at some point, Pat Riley's going to hang him up. We don't know when. It could be, I believe he just signed an extension, right?
Right. 5-year contract that allows him to spend more time working at his home in Malibu. But Riley has conveyed to us that he's not going to do that. He still intends to spend most of his time in South Florida.
So he'll be here. He works very, very hard, to be sure. You see him courtside at almost every game. He works behind the scenes. I mean, he's a very involved GM, to be sure. He's officially not the GM, president of basketball operations, but I mean, Andy Ellisberg is the GM, but he runs the basketball side of the show, no question about it. When he hangs him up, I've always thought, and I will still stick to this, that Eric Spoelstra will remain his coach, but he'll be installed as the head of basketball operations as well. I think he will be essentially the CEO, chief executive officer, and appoint a chief operating officer to do the day-to-day stuff. Do the calls, deal with agents, deal with everything the GMs do. And maybe it's Andy Ellsberg, who knows. And that person will report to him, and all big decisions have to come across Eric Spoelstra's desk. I think that's going to be the case. You could make a case, perhaps, although he's awfully new at this, Shane Battier. We all know how smart he is. He's now the director of analytics for the team. When we walk into team practices, it used to be we'd see most days Mickey Arison, Pat Riley, Andy Ellsberg. And now we're seeing Shane Battier is there quite a bit as well. Those are the two biggest candidates I see. How do you see this unfolding whenever that day may arrive?
I see Spoelstra as the person making personnel decisions. I think it's a no-brainer. I think he's earned that. He deserves that responsibility once Pat Riley decides to retire. I would see people who he would trust around him. Chet Cameron and Adam Simon are two people highly respected in the organization and outside the organization as well. Chet's been a terrific scout for many years who's uncovered Josh Richardson and other players. So he will have a strong supporting group around him to advise him on personnel moves. Nick Arison certainly might as well as a team CEO. The question for me is, will Battier develop into a person who is going to be a key figure in making player personnel decisions. He's not there yet, only because he's so new in the job.
Right.
Right? He's just a
but
few months in.
He's got the intellect, I think.
No question about it. Right. I would say the Heat's hope would be that he develops into that person.
All right. 786-360-0790. Now we're hearing, and I heard this before, I think the AP was reporting this before, are there any legs to this story that UD is talking to the, or at least being courted by the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Well, Tim Reynolds of AP mentioned that there had been contact. It's hard for me to envision that happening. Now, the one potential lure would be obviously going to another championship caliber team. He has a great relationship with LeBron, and his son is going to be a college football player, an offensive lineman, this season in Ohio, I believe for Toledo. So he would be fairly close to his son playing. So those would be the reasons to go, but it would be shocking to me if he does. He's a Heat lifer. He's going to be able to work for the organization this year. Well, certainly not this year, but certainly beyond this year whenever he retires, much as the Heat is taking care of Alonzo and Keith Askins. So it would be stunning if he left. And the money at a minimum contract is decent. It's $2 million. Last year when they had money available after Wade left, they rewarded him by giving him $5 million, which helped make up some of what he sacrificed when he basically took an offer from the Heat that was around $13, $14 million less than what Denver and Dallas offered.
Well, I think he took, and this is back in the summer of 2010.
Right.
He took a five-year, I believe these are the figures. I usually remember contract stuff. 5 years, $20 million with the Heat, and he turned down, as you say, 5 years, $34 million. I know at least Denver offered. I'm not sure if Dallas offered.
Exactly,
as well.
Yeah, Dallas had some interest at those numbers as well. Right, so he took a $14 million cut to stay here. The Heat last year gave him the five, which made up a little bit of that instead of the 1.4 veterans minimum. This year, the veteran minimum goes up, so he's in position to make $2.1 million by signing that contract. I'd be surprised if he doesn't.
Nah, but if he went, I mean, first of all, they can't offer both clubs, Cavs and Heat, would offer the minimum, right?
Right.
So we'd actually lose money by going up there because there's no state tax here.
Right. Exactly. Great point.
You know, so, yeah. And don't you think it would stick in the craw of Riley if UD went there, even if it was for just a season? Don't you think that would, as great a relationship as he has with UD, and it wouldn't create a divorce by any means, but it would make it a bit frosty, wouldn't it?
It would. It would. He's still so valued by this coaching staff. To watch UD every day around this team is to watch the epitome of a professional, the way he takes guys under his wing, the way he gives pep talks to Hassan Whiteside and pushes the right buttons. You know, Udonis told me he talks to Hassan before every single game. It's generally encouragement, but when there's a time where he has to be, you know, tough love mm-hmm. with him, he will do it. Hassan and Udonis said that dynamic between the two of them, he says it's never disrespectful. Udonis will sometimes be very assertive with him, maybe raise his voice, but he's never going to cuss him out or be disrespectful to him. So Udonis knows just the right touch with all these players on the roster. And that's why, even though obviously he doesn't play much, he is still so valued by this coaching staff.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk basketball still, but there was a sort of an embarrassing reason why you were late to get here. You got here before the show, but later than usual, and we're going to embarrass you on the air, okay?
That's fine.
It's a little embarrassing. Maybe this is something that's happened to all of you. It happened to me one time in my life. We'll talk about that next. Join Ethan and Curtis for an all-star broadcast Monday at Black Market in downtown Miami, just off Biscayne. The guys are giving away a pair of all-star Fan Fest tickets every half hour, but you have to be there. It starts at 4 p.m., $7 for a Major League Mojito, $6 for a 24-ounce Budweiser, and Derby Long Shots. Black Market Miami, presented by Red Rabbit. It takes the Miami sports fan back to the 80s. Black Market, the future of the sports bar with the history of Miami. AM 790 and FM 104.3 HD2, The Ticket, the official radio partner of the 2017 All-Star Week. I'm really excited to see that. You and I will both be at the stadium on Monday, Marlins Park. We'll see the Home Run Derby in person, have availabilities. The two managers will speak, although I have to admit I'm not real high on seeing what Brad Mills is going to say. You know, it's not exactly going to move the needle. It would have been fun to talk to Terry Francona and listen to him. The players will be made available. Didn't you say they're going to be each league? I guess they'll have their availabilities. The players will be lined along the wall in the outfield, and we can just walk up to them and talk to them.
Yes,
that's
yes.
going to be great.
And I was impressed today at FanFest at the Miami Beach Convention Center how many people were out there. A lot of kids, a lot of parents. It's a beautiful thing what they've done there. They have a full field, obviously not the size of a big league baseball field. A lot of interactive games. Pretty good foot traffic there today. I was impressed by that.
Yeah. So are you looking, when we talk to the players, I mean, look, I love the fact that we can talk to all stars. That's great. I'm trying to think if there's one that I want to see more than any other. I'd like to just go up to Aaron Judge. I mean, 6'7", 6'8", just a monster. On the flip side of that, Jose Altuve, who's shorter than I am, he and Jakeem Grant could have a short contest.
I love it. Here's a guy who I want to go up to. I want to go up to Brad Hand and basically ask him, but in a very pleasant way, why did you suck for 5 years here and then somehow turn everything around there? That to me is one of the more fascinating things because it speaks to the Marlins with player development. In this case, it does not speak favorably of them. So what did the Padres staff uncover? What did they unearth that the Marlins could not do to extract more out of Brad Hand?
That's a good question. By the way, I think the Cubs are the first team to win a World Series and not have any member of the World Series on the All-Star game the next season. None of them. Cubs have one All-Star in Wade Davis, but he wasn't on the team last year.
Amazing.
I mean, that's just how bad their team is, a dumpster fire. This year, the only person they've got here besides Wade Davis, the manager and the coaches, but that's it. You were late getting to the studio. You called me because you normally get here, you know, between 6 and 6:15. When you called me and I think you said like, oh, we have a problem or something like this. Like, oh my God, he's not coming for the show. You know, you prepare for a show to do with somebody. And then if you're automatic, all of a sudden solo, that's really rough. But you had an embarrassing reason why you were late. It had nothing to do with traffic.
Yes. So today I was at FanFest, as I was mentioning, at the Miami Beach Convention Center. I've lived a long time on Miami Beach growing up, so I'm familiar with the area. And a lot of the places that I would traditionally park were blocked off. So I had to go to a garage, which I was unfamiliar with. Very difficult to find parking today. So I parked in a garage. Always make a mental note or a written note where I parked.
You know,
and
what I do
what?
Is I, like, you know, they have like C3 or something like that. They have a letter and a number usually. I take a picture of it with my phone.
Oh, smart. Smart. So I got back to my, what I hoped would be getting back to my car, but I could not find my car. So I walked up row after row and I did this for about 20 minutes. And then I finally found a security guard and he offered to take me on a tour. Right, in his little golf cart. So I was forever indebted to him. And I showed him my ticket, and he said, sir, I've got news for you. You're not in this lot. And I said,
oh my
what?
God.
And he pointed out to me that there was a lot right next to this one, adjacent to Lincoln Road. So they're like back-to-back parking lots. And when I had left that lot, I had seen a Starbucks. So I thought I was going back into the right lot, but ultimately I did not. So once I got into the other lot, I was able to find my car pretty quickly. But here's the question. Is it nervy to ask a stranger to allow you to get in their car to look for your car? And if you're a stranger, would you allow anyone to do that?
I wouldn't do it to, you know, Joe, a regular guy, do it to a security guard like you did. But no, I wouldn't ask anybody else, and nor would I ever let anybody in my car if I didn't know them. That happened to me twice. One time, I have to admit, I got bombed the night before, and I was with my friend Joel, who I mentioned earlier in the show. And I said, it was my mom's car. And so we went back to the garage where I thought it was, and we couldn't find it. And I thought, you know, I wasn't sure what happened. I thought it got I almost called my mom and said, your car was stolen.
Wow.
And then, because it wasn't where I thought I parked it, and we were walking around. We're just about to go back and make that call, and I spotted it in another part of the parking lot. But, you know, part of that was, I'm sure, I probably shouldn't have been behind the wheel. I don't remember the exact circumstances, but it was not a good night.
And this was the second time this happened to me. The first time, unfortunately, happened on a date many years ago at a Florida Panthers game. Now, the good news was I had made the determination before that happened that I did not want to see this person again. The bad news was it was a very warm night, walking around the parking lot, convinced I had known where the car was parked. Ultimately, a security guy helped me. That's very embarrassing.
Yeah, my wife and I came back from a long flight to Seattle, and we thought we were in the right garage. I think it was a Dolphin garage at MIA. but we were on like the, you know, the ramps that go up and down, and we were sort of on the wrong side of those ramps, and we were looking and looking and looking, and we just, again, I was convinced that the car gets stolen, and it must have taken us 30 minutes to find where it was and realize we were on the wrong side of the garage. And that's why I take a picture now of everything, you know, where I am. You know, if I'm going out of town, I'll take a picture of where we parked at MIA, and just and so I know I'll never get lost again where I've left my car.
Yeah, that's the easiest place to get lost. And I don't think it's a function of dementia or getting old. You know who I feel bad for? I was talking to Mark Duper a few weeks ago, and he says so many times he will go outside for a reason and be outside, not remember why he went outside.
Yeah. Yep.
Or car keys constantly being lost. So you have to think all this is a function of, you know, all the hits you take as a player.
This is sort of tongue-in-cheek, but I've heard people who've experienced that or know a lot about dementia. Look, my mother passed away of dementia. And I'm not trying to make light of this, but losing your car keys is not dementia. And this sounds like I'm making fun, and I'm not. Forgetting what your car keys are for, that's really...
Interesting.
When things are bad, it's not losing them. I mean, I've walked around my house holding my wallet, looking for my wallet. Okay, so I've done that. Someone said that's why they make the panic button on the key fob. But if you were in a different garage, I'm not sure that signal would have worked that far.
It wouldn't have, right? Because I was pressing it relentlessly, you know, and with no success. So,
by the way, real quick, apropos of nothing, the Alabama Florida State game, which is going to be on September 2nd, the opening game. It's a season opener. That thing's already sold out. It's going to be in the new Atlanta Stadium, 75,000-seat stadium. And it says here, based on StubHub ticket prices, Alabama-Florida State upper deck tickets are ranging between $400 and $500. Which means the game is poised to be the second most expensive ticket in the 2017 season. The most expensive ticket surprised me. Georgia-Notre Dame. I'm just surprised that eclipses Alabama-Florida State.
Me too. Now, while that game, that Florida State-Alabama game, the Georgia Dome, is going to be the second most expensive ticket, here's one very good thing about that new stadium, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in downtown Atlanta that's opening the last week of August. You have to credit Arthur Blank and the Falcons for doing this. They are going to have $2 hot dogs, $2 sodas, $5 beer in that stadium. They are bringing prices back to 1970s and 80s levels, and you have to hand it to them. That, to me, is going to make Arthur Blank even more popular. And obviously, his popularity increased with the Falcons, at least making the Super Bowl before laying an egg in the second half. But what a nice move to give $2 hot dogs and $2 sodas for NFL games.
That's for the whole season.
That's for the whole Atlanta Falcons season. Not sure if those prices will be in place for those season-opening college games Labor Day weekend.
You somehow walk through the stands sometimes. We're lucky in the press box to get stuff. But I shake my head at some of these prices. They're insane.
Yeah, and Marlins Park prices are pretty high there, but they are everywhere, right?
No, I'm not picking on any team down here. It's across the spectrum of all sports.
Right. $9 chicken sandwiches, you know, even chicken fingers are what traditionally seems like $8, $9. Yeah. What, bottled water, $3 or $4.
I know. You know, we buy a 24-pack of bottled water at Publix for $4, and you go to a stadium and one bottle is $4.
Oh, only movie theaters are as bad as stadiums as far as pricing things beyond what they should be.
So any other things in the last few minutes, you know, we have of this segment as far as Heat-related news?
Well, looks right now on paper that you're probably looking at a fifth or sixth seed. The question to me is, are they better than the Milwaukee Bucks? Think very comparable. Think you go into the season thinking they're behind Boston,
yep,
Cleveland,
Toronto,
Washington, Toronto. Next tier, I would put Miami, Milwaukee. I would put Charlotte seventh. Charlotte's roster is decent. They added Dwight Howard to a team with Nick Batum, Kemba Walker, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Frank Kaminsky, Marvin Williams. Two very good draft picks. Malik Monk, who's going to be a terrific scorer, I think, out of Kentucky. Dwayne Bacon, the Florida State guard, who's been very impressive in summer league. To me, those are seven surefire playoff teams. Who's your eighth playoff team, Josh? Is it the Knicks trying Carmelo Porzingis over again?
Nope.
Maybe adding Tim Hardaway Jr.? Is it Philadelphia? Is it too soon?
I think it's too soon for them.
Okay. What they did this offseason, they got J.J. Redick, so that'll give them a
23
good start.
Million, right?
Exactly. That'll give them a good starting two guard. Also, obviously, they have their young core coming back of Embiid and Darko Saric and Ben Simmons. Mir Johnson they added, who's been, you know, a decent NBA starter. I think Detroit will be in the mix. They made major news today. They acquired Avery Bradley from Boston.
That's
they
a good
renounced
move.
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's been a pretty good NBA two guard, last few years can defend and shoot. But other than that, they've done nothing of significance. Langston Galloway at $7 million a year. Orlando, maybe. They have not done much. They have a young core of Aaron Gordon, Evan Fournier, Elfrid Payton, Jonathan Isaac, the Florida State kid. I'm discounting Atlanta. They've obviously lost Millsap and Howard. I'm discounting Indy. Their best players now are Miles Turner and Oladipo after the Paul George trade. I'm discounting Chicago, which has Lauri Markkanen, Dwayne Wade, Zach LaVine, Robin Lopez.
I'm discounting Chicago, Atlanta, Indiana.
Brooklyn, right?
Brooklyn as well. Yeah. I'm not ready to put the Sixers among the top eight. I'm just, and maybe they'll surprise me, maybe they will, but and maybe their plan is finally coming to fruition. I'm just not ready to say they're one of the eight best teams in the Eastern Conference.
I agree with you. I still think they're awfully young. They need another year. So by default, New York or Detroit? Oh, my gosh. A Knicks team that won in the low 30s might add Tim Hardaway Jr. if the Atlanta Hawks don't match that offer sheet. They've got Carmelo, Porzingis, Hernan Gomez, who's a good young center prospect. So Steve Mills, basically, in taking over for Phil Jackson, has done nothing except extend an offer sheet to Tim Hardaway. He hasn't moved Carmelo. Obviously, Carmelo had the no-trade clause. That's probably the smart thing to do. Just let things settle in before James Dolan decides who to hire. And then Detroit has some pieces. They were on the fringes of the playoff battle, but it's hard to come up with eight playoff teams in the East now.
Now, you had some quotes earlier from James Johnson, right?
Right. Yeah, James Johnson had a conference call with
while we were on the air tonight,
and said it's a dream come true for him to come back, a blessing, always wanted to be here. Pat Riley called him the epitome of a Miami Heat player. And Pat Riley used the word happy in a press release saying, this makes me happy to bring James Johnson back. He says, we are happy for James and his family as we look for him to have an even greater year next year. JJ says, I am a Heat lifer. I really do consider myself a Heat guy. I fell in love with the culture. What respect I have for James Johnson, what he did to his body, the teammate he is, waiting on the Gordon Hayward resolution before wanting his contract to address. This guy is a real professional, a team-first guy, and he does everything pretty well. Don't know that he does anything great, except maybe defend. I think he's a very good defender. Mm-hmm. But we saw last year he can create, he can distribute, he can shoot threes better than he ever has. You know, has a bit of a post-up game. So $15 million, I know some people might say a little high to pay him $15 million a year, but this is the going right now for NBA power forwards who are starter worthy.
And he bought into that Heat culture very early. I mean, he lost all that weight, as you said. You know, I remember talking to him in January, how much he just absolutely fell in love with this team, the coaching staff, everything about the Miami Heat. It was just it was the right place at the right time for the right player.
Absolutely. And so in 5 days, the Heat's offseason business largely done. They're up to 13 players. Udonis Haslam will be the 14th. 15th could be Luke Babbitt or someone else. They could save their $4.3 million exception for January or February in case Dwayne Wade or somebody else shakes free. They'll sign five developmental kids for training camp. So we now know who the Miami Heat team is, and your offseason grade for them would be?
I'd say about a B. I'm not going to give them an A. I mean, they didn't land the whale. That might have gotten that if they were able to land Gordon Hayward. I'm not sure how interested they were. Now, he never really hit the market, but Blake Griffin, who quickly did a U-turn and returned to the L.A. Clippers. I think they did the best they could with what they had. I think once Hayward's off the market, the priority was bringing back Johnson and Waiters into the fold. They did that. They surprised everybody by bringing in Olynyk, who needs to improve his defense to be sure, but he can, as you say, he can spread the floor. He may end up being the starting four. We'll find out as time folds on. It's a nice headache for Eric to have. And they were able to bring back Ellington because they were able to find a trading partner for Josh McRoberts and finally rid that contract and get it off their books.
Yeah, getting rid of him was the most remarkable thing this offseason. Obviously, you can't give him an A because they didn't get Hayward, but I think you can give him a really strong B to be able to fit in Deion Waiters, James Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, Wayne Ellington into $34 million. Get rid of McRoberts was a coup.
All right, you know, we had Tom DeAngelo on earlier in the show to talk about this. It was a lot of opinions. It was before Ellington re-upped with the team, but really a lot of strong opinions and interesting talk between him, me, and Barry. That's next. So a lot has happened with the Heat around the NBA. To talk about that, we're going to be joined right now by Tom DeAngelo of the Palm Beach Post. He covers the team, and Tom joins us right now in the Orion Fuels and Downstairs Convenience Stores guest line. They are truly steps beyond convenient. Tom, busy, busy week for you as the Heat has a lot has happened with this team, including a big surprise. How shocked were you? I know I was. I was on the air last night along with Barry when all of a sudden out of left field, Kelly Olynyk happened. How surprised were you about that?
First of all, let me say this. I can't believe it was just a week ago that I was on with you guys and we were in Orlando. And I feel like I had hair. It was that long ago.
It's dog years, it feels like.
Oh,
right?
My gosh. I can't believe it was like this has been the longest week of my life, basically. But, no, I was I couldn't believe it. When I saw the report started coming out, it took everybody by surprise. Now, it was interesting when he became a free agent. The thought crossed my mind, and you know, as you're putting together a list and you're saying, okay, he don't get Gordon Hayward, they're going to have some money here, no matter what they do. What are they going to do? Because we knew if we got him, it basically was probably going to be JJ, and then it basically be done. But never really, when I look think back about it, I kind of like am beating myself up saying, why didn't I take it more seriously? Because in the end, you know, with the money they had and with the team they have, they needed some help coming off the bench. You didn't want to go into the season with just a rookie being kind of your number one big man coming off the bench. In this case, maybe McRoberts, if he was still around. So kind of, you know, when you look at it, kind of makes sense. Kind of style he plays, they like it. Versatile, stretch guy. He can shoot from outside, can defend, good passer. And when you started boiling it down, you thought, okay, you know, then this might not be a bad move.
Tom, they're obviously not paying him $12 million a year strictly to be a backup center. So would you envision him starting ahead of James Johnson and Spoelstra keeping the JJ-TJ combination off the bench again?
That's tough, Barry. I think, first of all, James would have to be on board with that. But are they paying? You're right. They're not paying him $12 million to come off the bench, but are they paying $50 million? Are they paying JJ $60 million to come off the bench?
Right.
You know, so one of them has to come off the bench. I think JJ starts. Let me put this way. It's up to James. I think if he says, look, I was really comfortable last year and I really enjoyed it, they would probably try to roll out the lineup with Olynyk in the starting lineup. But my gut is because of seeing what he meant to that team last year, those last five games, and we saw what he meant all year, but it was a different feel the last five games. Don't you think? I thought it felt like it was, you know, they had another legitimate star on the court, and it was kind of just a different team, even though, yes, he still played the big minutes when he came off the bench. So I'm my guess right now is is JJ is in the starting lineup, but I don't know. You make a good point. It might be interesting to see him starting alongside Hassan Whiteside.
Who's the starting three? Is that up for a question at all?
I still think, Barry, don't you think it's Justice? I mean, Justice, I'll put it this way. Justice has the first chance to win that job, right?
Right. I would think unless he's abysmal in October, then he would win the job. I would say Magruder had to be appreciably better than him October to not start out of him, right?
And I agree. And what's interesting is where Magruder fits in. Because now you've got, you definitely bench, your top three players off the bench are, say, J.J. Stotts, and Olynyk and Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson. You've got probably Wayne Ellington. Wink, wink. We'll find out more in 4.5 hours. And then Rodney Magruder. And where does Bam fits in the front court? So it's going to be interesting. Where there is a need, though. There is a need for a three in this team. Somebody can come in and play a three. But again, you know, Eric will play a lot of three guard lineup. So is there much? You know, I'm really going to be, if he does not start, Rodney Magruder looks like he's going to be a starter or a 10th man.
Tom DeAngelo joins us, covers the Heat for the Palm Beach Post. Look, we all know, all three of us, that Eric Spoelstra has enormous influence within this club. This sounds to me, Tom, and to you, Barry, like he was really influential in this, maybe saying to Pat, I really like this club. I mean, I want, you know, obviously there are a few changes. Willie Reed is gone. Olynyk is coming in and a few minor changes, but basically it's the same team that's come back. How much do you think Eric Spoelstra had a say in this, that, you know what, I really want to, I'm invested in this team?
I mean, I think it's all pretty equal. I mean, between, well, I shouldn't say all. I think Pat and Eric probably have the two most powerful voices in that aspect of it. And I know how much they, we all know how much Eric kind of fell in love with this team and what this team meant to him and how hard he took that night, you know, that night of April 12th and what happened that night and winning the game. It was the most depressing, you know, atmosphere that you've ever had after a win.
Yep.
That being said, though, this team is far from competing for a championship.
No, I know
so,
that.
So the problem, the thing is, it's easy to say that we're going to bring this team back when there's really no other, there's no other option. Once Fair Gordon point. Hayward was lost, this was the best option for them. This was the best possible recovery and maybe a little better than we thought because no one figured Kelly Olynyk would be part of this. So it's easy to say that and say, yes, that's what we wanted. But, you know, we don't know what their plan A was. And this was the plan B, and they executed that plan B as best they could.
Now, what do you think, Tom, the ceiling is for this team as far as seeding in the conference? Could they realistically compete with Washington and Toronto for 3 and 4? Do you see Milwaukee being a tad ahead of them? Are they ahead of Charlotte?
I think they are, if right off the bat, I would say they're fighting Milwaukee for fifth. And so they're a fifth, sixth. They're a 5-6. They're in there. They're the Milwaukee. Now, and this goes for Milwaukee, too. Everything goes right. You know, a season without any major injuries. Toronto loses Kyle Lowry again for three months or something, or John Wall gets hurt. Yes, they could climb into the top four, and so could Milwaukee. But I think everything being equal, this is those two teams are shooting for fifth and sixth, and I think the absolute ceiling is winning one round and getting to the second round of the playoffs. To get to the Eastern Conference Finals would be, you know, that would be an absolute, that means beating either Cleveland or Boston and everything being equal, no major injuries, that's not happening. So probably the ceiling as far as how far they can get is winning one round, getting to the second round of the playoffs.
Right. I would concur with that. Now, yeah. Deion at $12.5 million a year, James at 15, is that about what you think market value would be for them? I guess the question with James is, did they bid against themselves or were there other offers even approaching that?
I think that's interesting because I don't think Utah was seriously in it. I think that was just put out there to make it look like there was somebody else interested. It's funny because if you asked me this 2 months ago, I would have said those exact numbers, but reversed.
Right.
I would have said, you know, Deion, I would have thought that they would have loved paying those two, you know, being able to get those two for $27 million, and I figured Deion would get the higher contracts. But I look at I see the contracts as the 4 years don't bother me because I don't think if you take the three guys that are going to sign today, my guess is two of the three will not be here in 4 years. Will be traded. These are tradable contracts. You know, these numbers in three years are going to be very reasonable. As long as these players are what we think they are, these are going to be very reasonable numbers that could be traded in case they need to open up more cap space, in case there's somebody out there that, you know, and there's kind of another kind of a semi-reboot, semi-rebuild, and they need to get more space. These are, as will probably be, you know, Justice Winslow the ultimate would be trying is, you know, the toughest one right now, which appears to be Tyler Johnson. But these are contracts I think are tradable, so that I don't believe the 4 years is a major issue because I'm not sure. I don't believe at all that all three of them will be here in 4 years.
I think one of the pleasant surprises was they found a trade partner to take Josh McRoberts off That's their hands, and it freed up the money necessary to sign Ellington. That one was a bit of a surprise to me. How about you?
Well, yes and no. It does make sense that Dallas wanted to get rid of that. You know, they, this year they wanted that expiring contract, so they got rid of basically it saves them $1.5 million on Hammond's contract in 2 years. So they bite the bullet this year. They're not going anywhere this year, so that's fine with them. So that it helps both teams in that way. You know, and it gets Miami freed right away. It basically Dallas allowed them to keep Wayne Ellington. And the Heat allowed Dallas to save $1.5 million on their cap going in next season.
Tom, biggest winner in free agency, biggest loser among teams?
I was going to say Chris Haynes as among writers.
Right, breaking the Hayward story.
Well, I mean, really, the best if Chris Paul is a well, let's say if we're talking about free agency only, if we're talking about just teams, people, you know, players moving, then Oklahoma City is the biggest winner getting Paul George for what they got. I guess you have to say Boston because the biggest, the best name, the biggest name, the only max guy to change teams right now. I guess Millsap is close, but the only guy with the absolute 4-year max contract right now to switch teams is Gordon Hayward. But you know, I don't like them. You know, I think they take a step forward, but then they take a half a step back, losing Bradley and Olynyk. So, but nobody else really. And we knew this, Barry. This wasn't a great year, and I don't see a lot of teams bettering themselves to that extent because they just weren't the guys out there to get better. Now, the teams that are just taking a free fall. I mean, there are three teams that come off the top of our head, and everybody's talked about these three teams. Indiana, Chicago, and Atlanta appear to be going in, you know, full rebuild, full tank mode, which, of course, everybody's talked about weakening the East. But those three teams had a tough offseason and are having to start all over again.
I think surprising, maybe now some be a trade, some be a free agency, but a lot of really good players, fellas, went from East to West. You know, the West is a much harder road to get to the finals, and yet Gordon Hayward, I mean, some were traded, Paul George, Jimmy Butler, but some like Paul Millsap and others opted to sign there. It's, oh, look, if I'm Paul Millsap and Denver's offering me $30 million a year for 3 years, guess what? Where do I sign? But Hayward really was the only one that I can think of, big name, and maybe there are others that just aren't occurring to me, that went from West to East.
That went from East. Hayward is the only big name that went from West to East. That's right. And I think it played a big part of it. I look at two things playing a part in that decision, which I was totally wrong on this. I didn't think the Brad Stevens factor would be that big. I mean, he played for 2 years. You know, he's played for Quinn Snyder for 4, I think. And then once he met Spo, which to me, you look at, you know, Brad Stevens and Spo, kind of, you know, they're young, up and coming players, coaches, players love them. You figure that, and from what we all heard, and Barry knows as well as anybody, that he was really impressed by Spo in their meeting. So, but in the end, in his letter, he said he referenced the connection and his relationship with Brad Stevens. But that's one part of it. The other part of it, Josh, is I would guess is getting out of the West. I mean, Utah, even with Gordon Hayward, is fifth. I mean, they're kind of like what the Heat are now without Gordon Hayward. But what Utah is with him, and now without him, obviously they're fighting to, they probably not make the playoffs. But that had to be a part of his decision because, man, that conference is loaded.
No question. Now, Tom, obviously you and I love the NBA. Josh likes it too. One of the complaints you hear is that everyone knows what's going to happen by the end of May as far as the team still playing. So I guess one mystery is, who's the fourth best team in the Western Conference behind Golden State and Houston and San Antonio? Who's the other four team we're likely to see in the conference semifinals at West?
Who am I missing? It's not...
I guess Clippers, OKC, Portland.
I think OKC with the moves they made and with Paul George. I think Minnesota is going to take a step up. It's still going to be very competitive going down to the 8th seed. The Clippers, they rebounded pretty good losing Chris Paul. They're not bad. I don't think they obviously didn't just go into a full rebuild. So they'll be there. Portland's still pretty good. Memphis has taken a step back. And Denver's going to be pretty good. Denver had a lot of, you know, nice young players, and they lose Gallinari.
But get Millsap.
But the Clippers, and they get Millsap, correct. So I, if I had a guess, I would put OKC in the top four. And then, boy, when you look at that, though, if you put Denver, Portland, maybe Minnesota, maybe the Clippers, you get a pretty good bottom four for the playoffs. And the question is, after Cleveland and Boston, are Cleveland and Boston the only two teams in the East that would make the playoffs in the West? Are there eight better teams, you know, other than Cleveland and Boston, when any of those teams make the playoffs? I think Washington, Toronto are fringe, fighting for eight. They're down at the bottom. I think Cleveland and Boston are the only two teams you could say, if they're in the Western Conference, that would make the playoffs.
Real quick, a year from now, is LeBron on the Cavs?
Oh, man, that is such a hard question to answer because we have no idea what's going to happen. But If I had to guess, I am going to say yes, he returns. But that's like 50.1% as opposed to 49.9%.
I think he, you know what? I think he's brought the title to Cleveland. I think he did what he promised. I'm guessing he's in another uniform in a year.
Well, which one is it? Is there any other choice? Is it only the Lakers?
I would guess so. I mean, and you know what? I mean, yes, he'd be kind of a hired gun, but imagine, and Barry, you might know this. Has any player won three titles with three different teams? I mean, maybe there has been, but that'd be quite an accomplishment.
Probably Robert Horry, no?
Yeah, you know, he might have. Yeah, he's got seven rings. He's probably, that's a good one.
But here's the other question. Is there any chance that those four, the banana boat guys, get together? And there are any chances that it's in South Florida?
Well, Chris Paul, you know, if Houston wants to, can sign him to that super max deal next year.
Right.
And so that $200+ million. You know what? I'd say, guys, I'll do FaceTime with you. Okay, I'm going to be over here in Houston. You go to L.A. or Miami, wherever you want.
Yeah,
I'll be here in Texas.
You would say that, but someone who's making, oh, see, these guys, you know, the way they talk, you know, obviously, the guy who would probably make the biggest sacrifice would have to be Carmelo, because he'd have to opt out. And he'd be giving up 26. If this happens, two of the three are going to have to probably take minimum. You know, Dwayne would take minimum to do it, probably after this year. So which one of the others, are the other three going to all get together and say, we'll take $15 million each? No. So I think somebody's going to have to. What you need is you can fit two of them in, and then the other two are going to have to take minimum. That's the issue, because I think Dwayne would. I think you'd have one guy. You're going to be one guy short of taking a minimum to get them together, is my guess. But it's, you know what? And it's that close, though. It's that close that it could happen, because every one of them can be a free agent a year from now.
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking the time to come out with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys. We're all ready to get some rest.
Get some rest. Okay, yeah. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, that's going to do it. My thanks to Tom DeAngelo for coming on. Barry, terrific job last night and tonight. Appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week. You'll be on with me next Thursday along with Adam Beasley. I will actually be off until Wednesday. I'll be doing All-Star Game stuff at Marlins Park on Monday and Tuesday, so I'll be back on the air Wednesday. Grant and Santee, terrific job by you guys. Appreciate it very much. Coming up next here on The Ticket, ESPN Radio.